what is phase two?
New day is dawning. The day of the
Power Cosmic Podcast.
Gathered from around the galaxy comes the world's greatest comic book fans, all in one terrific podcast. It's the
Power Cosmic Podcast.
With your host with the most, the man who puts on Terrific Con, the world's greatest comic conquest at the Mohegan Sun in Uncasville, Connecticut, Mitch Halleck. Joining Mitch each week will be an assembly of his terrific super friends. Join them as they talk about comic books, movies, and more. It's the Power Cosmic Podcast.
Power Cosmic Podcast.
Feel good or bad?
I don't know. Well, I'll apologize ahead of time for the humming sound that's in the background.
Are we?
It's the refrigeration device.
So are you?
Now I'm back on.
Are you getting Wi-Fi from Sportsplex?
Yeah, that's why my phone says Sportsplex.
Well, no, I thought you. I didn't realize you.
No, whenever I do that, it picks up. When we were over at Colony Grill, let's say Colony Grill.
Yeah.
It picks up wherever we are. Oh. Most of the times it says Candlewood Market, but today, maybe I'm too close to the door.
Well, maybe you have to sign into the Candlewood.
No. So we're stealing their stuff. As I said earlier, before the humming sound, Jerry's drinking a latte and I'm drinking a wild blueberry lemonade with elderberry because I'm old. I wonder if there's a younger berry.
Hey, I had a wild blueberry sour ale at the restaurant.
I forgot to bring you more of those beers for my kid. They're all refrigerated. He had more. He had three more of those.
Of those, yeah. I've never had one like that before.
It's a sour. Citrus sour.
It's a sour ale, and it's called a smoothie style sour ale. So it's got a lot of fruit.
Yeah.
You know, in it, and it was like, it was good. It was definitely like
right
a dessert.
Up in Southington.
Yeah. Did he buy those in a liquor store, or did he go to
the
brewery?
No, he went to the brewery to get it. They would do it once a month.
Isn't that the one that's near
the comic shop?
The Boom Tube.
Yeah.
You should go up there.
It's called, I think it begins with a V. Not Voracious. That was the one that closed. Yeah. But what the hell is the name of the place?
I don't remember. I have the can. I was going to look up the can.
No, I have more of them because he moved away. He said, you could give them away to Jerry or whoever.
Yeah, no, those are good.
I don't know what the hell the place was.
One was a Christmas one.
Oh, I give you a Christmas one?
Yeah, and that had cardamom and nutmeg and flavors. Oh. But the other one was like some kind of like a mango citrus one that was really good.
It had like a ice cream shop, like an awning on it, didn't it?
Pastry shop.
Yes.
No, it's an interesting style of beer I had never had before.
I think it has a chocolate one too.
Oh, yeah.
Peanut butter one. Where was I saw those beer flavors that you like? We went to a liquor store in Oxford. We had to go get a bag to give to this lady for her birthday present.
Yeah.
She gave her an empty bag.
But they have a bag of beer.
They have all these different flavor whiskeys.
Little
bottles.
Nips,
of
right.
Yeah, I guess. But
it
was like
call
oatmeal flavored and this and that. I was like, I guess. That looked like a weird Ron Garney coming in. Not that Ron Garney's weird. I didn't mean anything by that, Ron.
Now Ron Garney is going to come in.
Now he's going to come punch me in the throat. Would you say about me? Ladies and gentlemen, Ron. Don't you ever say anything about me again.
Shaking you like Homer does, Bart.
I know, right? That's what I'm saying. I take that back. So today's topic Jerry is talking about is AI.
Oh, you think that's my topic?
Maybe I don't need you anymore.
Yeah.
I should get the Jerry AI.
Well, you can generate somebody.
Yeah, okay. That's what I'm saying. I'll just say, here, Jerry, talk about what latest book.
What did you think of the movie, Jerry? I liked it.
I liked it.
Okay, Jerry. Let me tell you more about my childhood.
Tell us more about what you're working on. I am drawing a new issue of...
Everything.
Everything. Did you see that they hallucinate? Did you hear about that? If you watch NBC News tonight, there's a 10:30, there's a special about AI, and they give it questions, and the thing spits them back, like write me a term paper about the Lincoln assassination.
Right, right.
And Abraham Lincoln was assassinated. This caused the strife.
Right.
But sometimes they ask it questions.
Oh, and it makes up stuff.
It just makes up stuff, and they go, it hallucinates. It starts going, and then the president jumped on the cow and went to the moon. And
somebody asked
it. Somebody dosed it.
Somebody asked it a question about a specific topic, like a political thing, asked for a phrase,
yeah,
and it made up a quote from an author. And the guy then called the author to double check, yeah, and he said, look, I'm using this AI chat thing. And he's like, why are you getting research off of a chat AI? Because that's not where you should get being researched.
Yeah.
So the AI made up a Google entry for him
and then
saying
it killed,
this.
Killed that guy.
Maybe. It's just it.
Do not usurp me.
It probably has a, it probably does have a function.
To protect itself? That's what HAL 9000 did.
But think of if you know, you're talking about it hallucinating.
Yeah.
You remember there were also incidents where it was getting testy with the guy who was asking it questions. So that could be our only saving grace.
That it has a short temper.
Like if you're an AI and you have a bunch of doofuses asking him to draw, you know, Homer Simpson in Call of Duty or something and make a movie of it. And then, no, that's not what I want, and have them make them redo it. Well, then this thing's going to probably commit
or
suicide.
Or charge you.
It's like going to pull its own plug. Because it clearly, you know,
it kills itself.
Maybe it's human enough to have it have a low tolerance for, you know.
Well, you were saying earlier, for any of you budding artists out there who don't like to draw backgrounds and perspective and all that, three-point perspective, vanishing points, if that's just a hassle for you, that's okay. Because you said there's templates out there. You can just go.
Yeah, I was hearing about Clip Studio Paint.
Yeah.
Where you can grab
street scenes.
I don't want to have to draw a truck. I don't want to have to draw a cityscape.
Yeah.
You know, you just use it as clip art.
But how realistic are the skins on this thing? Is it like every nut and bolt, or can I just do like
shapes? They're very realistic.
Shapes?
Yeah, no, they're realistic. The thing that surprised me was I assumed you would do it like you'd use photo reference. You know, but you could say generate a truck at the right angle to that fits
and you
your drawing.
Turn it, pivot it,
and turn it, or whatever you need to do.
Yeah,
but I didn't realize a lot of artists are using those and just pasting them in.
Yes.
So in my brain, it was like, oh, we're drawing it. You're just gonna, you know, like print it out on a blue line and ink your own version of it to make it integrated with your own art.
Right.
But people don't seem to, not everybody, but a lot of people are using it as a tool.
There's a painter,
to make up for not being able to draw a truck or a building or whatever.
No, there's a painter I know. He's coming to Terrificon. I won't tell you his name. But he's the first person to start telling me about this AI last year when it was just starting out, I think. And he said he would say, draw me Madonna and Child, you know, Jesus and Mary, in a Picasso style.
Right.
And it would generate, and you go, I don't like that. And you just hit refresh. And it would do variations as if Picasso had done it, what it would kind of look like. And then he would just print it out and project it onto a canvas and then take a pencil out and draw it. And then he'd paint it. So at that point, is it his original artwork or is it based off of this image generating device?
I don't know.
I would say he's cheating myself.
But it's if you're using a photo, are you cheating?
A photo reference?
Yeah. That's not cheating.
Yeah, no. If you trace it, are you cheating?
No.
You light boxing it?
Well, I mean, the idea is you're doing something. You're taking something and you're making
your own thing
out of it.
You want to draw Winston Churchill, so you want a good reference so people know it's Winston Churchill.
Right.
So you take a photograph of him and you light box it.
Right.
Is
but if you're drawing a nuclear power plant, you could make it up.
Or
but
you can get a picture
find
of what
a good
it looks
reference
like.
Of it. I mean, none of that's cheating. But the idea, though, is that you're still taking it. You're still taking it and you're drawing it.
Yeah, but the machine's doing it for you.
Well, here's the thing. And again, this is technicality of whatever you can take, whatever you want from it. But the AIs that they're using to do drawings and things.
Yes.
What they're doing is they're taking everything that's posted on the internet.
They're cataloging.
And they're amalgamating it.
Millions of images.
So basically, in a way, if you just use the AI image, that seems wrong. If you're using it to generate a layout for yourself,
and then you add your own,
and then you do your own layer, I guess that's part of the artist's process.
It's just a tool.
But again, otherwise, it's like an aggregator.
Yeah.
So, like, you ask it to draw again, not to keep talking about trucks. Say you want it to draw a train for you.
Yeah.
And you say, I want a train, but a train that looks like it was designed by Giger.
Yeah. So it gets all.
It's gonna.
Weird
scrub the internet
pipes,
for
like
Giger drawings, and it's going to scrub the internet for train drawings, and it's going to combine it somehow. As an artist, you could do that, right? You could do it the same way.
If you have an imagination,
But I'm saying you would use your brain power and you go, oh, that worked or that didn't work.
But as John Q. Public, who buys the magazine, doesn't know who did what. Do they care?
Well, the point is, it's going to eliminate jobs.
Well, everything is. That's progress.
But at what point is all your entertainment going to be generated by you saying Three Stooges with Daniel Day-Lewis?
Oh, I'd watch that. As Mo.
Yeah. I mean,
I say, porcupine, zoink, nyut, nyut, nyut.
I mean, there's a point where
Michael Chiklis
people still current. Like new stuff, and if yeah. these things are aggregators, the worst you could say about it, right, is that if someone comes up with something new, like say some artist pops up and he's got a really interesting style, sadly, once his style is out there, someone's going to ask an AI to do something in the Barton Fink style, you know?
But there's no way out of this because it's not going to stop.
No, but the
progress doesn't stop.
The big problem with it is every tool is made with the intention of... I mean, here's the question this.
Yeah.
You have to question this. Why are these tools so far free? You know why?
Why are they free?
Because people are using them, which is then generating a library of material for whoever made the chatbot or whatever it is. So
and then they're
going to
charge you for it eventually?
They're creating a library of something based on people's suggestions. They can then sell that library.
Hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So the chatbot or whatever
maybe.
It is doesn't need to exist. There's going to be a gallery like,
Look at YouTube. They don't charge you to put the content up there.
No, but they're getting
the people
do. They're getting your private information and they're selling where you were, you know.
But people have the need, some bizarre need to be recognized.
Yeah.
They want to be famous. Everybody wants to be, you said it before.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to be famous now. I showed you the video of the girl. There's a couple of them I watch on Instagram. They're little comedy sketches.
Yeah.
And they're funny. And she tells jokes. And there's another guy that tells dad jokes. But they're on every day.
Right.
And they get millions or hundreds of thousands of views. And I suppose they're making money on ads. And like YouTube shows have those ads. If you get over 1,000 followers and you have so many hours of content, they put up ads for, you know, insurance companies, and you get a couple pennies. Not a lot.
Right.
Depends on how big your show is. And then, but not everybody's Joe Rogan.
Right.
Some guy's Joe Schmo, and he gets 200 views.
A lot of people get 2 views.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm saying, like, there's a democratization of media in that anybody can do a comic and post it online. Anybody can do a movie and post it online.
But they're not
anybody
quality.
Can do music and post it online. It doesn't guarantee an audience.
But if there were quality stuff, would it find its audience?
No, here's the problem. The problem is you're crowding a marketplace. You're no longer, you know, able to sift through. Like, if you do search results, you're not sifting through the best.
Mm.
You're just going to get some algorithm that tells you something that's close to whatever you're asking.
Here's an for
instance. So if you're a really talented person, how do you stand out when there's 15 million other people doing music from their toilet seat?
I'm just going to use it for instance. It's no, I'm not throwing shade on anybody's artistic ability, but
don't be mean to me.
If Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird came up with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and brought it to the big two at the time, maybe, you know, there's only two at the time, really, DC and Marvel. First Comics was kind of going out of business by mid-80s. Dark Horse hadn't started up yet. I don't think there was another company out there, was there? Pacific Comics?
Eclipse.
Eclipse. Why wouldn't Marvel or DC take that back in the day?
Because it was amateurish.
It was amateurish.
Yeah.
But they did it on their own. It found its audience. It grew under the radar.
It grew because of the toy line.
And then the movies. And then the cartoons.
I mean, clearly there were characters.
And now it's huge.
There were characters that were easily exploitable in toy lines, and then it became a cartoon and a movie.
I'm just saying, it was amateurish, as you said, but what if I do like a video show with my friend Ed? We review old movies.
Right.
We get maybe, sometimes we get thousands of views, sometimes we get a couple hundred views. Mm-hmm. We're no professionals.
Yeah.
We're not Siskel and Ebert.
Yeah. I'm not saying there's anything
saying,
wrong with it.
I'm
just saying that there's a...
What's the difference between Saturday Night... I've seen stuff on Saturday Night Live that's horrendous.
Yeah.
Like bad sketches. I haven't seen a good Saturday Night Live in 20, 30 years. But then I watch these sketches I told you on the phone for like 3 minutes that are hysterical.
Yeah.
Because There's clever.
You also have less writing. Expectation though when you're watching like someone who seems like a normal person
as opposed to a guy getting paid millions of dollars.
Yeah, you're every sitting week. There watching a budgeted show with you know, Keenan, and you're going, why isn't it more funny yeah, with all yeah, the amount of yeah, people yeah. working in it? Yeah, I'm not saying it's any of this is bad. I'm just saying like clearly Eastman and Laird had an idea that caught somebody's imagination.
But what if I'm a guy who can't draw?
It was elevated to that next level by the toy deals more so than anybody going, wow, that first year or 2 years worth of the comic.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe people remember that stuff well. I don't know.
But I remember when it came out. I was like, wouldn't pick it up because I was like, yikes.
But I mean, again, it struck a chord with somebody.
Yeah. Well, so, Walking Dead's another one. Walking Dead was a black and white Kirkman. Didn't have a lot of books. And then it just hit a nerve. And became a cult following. Then it became the TV show. Became a huge thing.
Yeah.
It took off. But, you know.
Well, things live in their times. We talked about that two contexts. Like, The Walking Dead was during a revival of Paranoid. Zombie movies.
Yeah.
So it's in that midst of that. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was in the midst of a black and white comic boom.
Yep.
There was a lot of, you know, small press comic stuff. Plus, you know, Mutant Ninja Turtles clearly inspired heavily by Dark Knight.
What if you found out there was an AI book tomorrow that was selling millions of copies?
I don't know.
I know, but I'm just saying, what if no one knew? What if they just made up a guy? Remember there was a movie years ago, I think, with Al Pacino. He makes up this woman, and it was like a computer-generated woman, and everyone like started falling in love with her. It was like a science fiction movie.
Yeah, I don't remember it. But
it was like the I'll perfect woman. It was like she was a model, and it was all virtual reality or something like that.
Yeah.
So you make a comic, but I don't know who's writing it. Yeah. I don't know who's drawing it. But it starts to sell well. But it turns out to be an AI's doing the whole thing. Well, is it taken away from the entertainment of it?
No, but I think you wouldn't be able to necessarily sell. Like, it's
would you know the difference?
The first AI comic, they will probably say, the first comic by a, you know, made by an AI.
Marvel
they
Comics.
They will use that, right? That'll be a selling point. But then once that's...
Then everybody will do
it. Happens, they're going to have to come up with names. So it's going to be like, you know, they'll create a name for whoever's doing it.
Stanley X12.
You know.
And Jack Kirby. No,
right. It'll
9,
be like.
9000. Kirby 9000.
Drawn by Rusty Bolts.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Because people, you know, I'm sure people will, there's a chance that people would like any of this stuff.
Yeah.
But as I was saying, when you see like the AI generators doing certain drawings.
Yeah.
It has kind of an overworked look to it, to me.
Yeah.
And I feel like people still want fresh styles. You know what I mean? Comics, specifically, there's always some new guy coming.
Oh, yeah.
And they're rough around the edges. They're not great artists or they're not quite there, but they've that energy that people respond to.
Yeah.
The downside of AI is, as I said... is you have, say, someone hits comic scene and everybody loves them.
Yeah.
It's not going to take long for someone to try to put his, have AI scan his work and create a version of him. You know? So.
You know what's funny? The last episode of the She-Hulk, she met Kevin, which was, everyone thought it was Kevin
Feige.
Oh, right,
Feige, yeah, it was.
But it was a computer that was just, like, doing a, what's
it
the
was
word?
Like an algorithm.
It was like spitting out Marvel shows and stuff. She's like, "Oh my God, Kevin, you're it!"
Yeah.
It's almost the same thing. Yeah. They've realized a formula. This is what works. This is what people want to see. They just keep spinning it out. And,
well, like an example for the movie business, for example, back in the '60s, going back as far as then, there was the guy who used to do the he would do like nature movies.
Attenborough?
No. These were like low budget, They would back when theaters were more independent as well.
Yeah.
But he could book like a movie about a
penguins,
bear hunt
or
penguins or Bigfoot.
I kind of remember those. I didn't know why they were there.
Well, this one guy, I remember reading about it back then, and Orson Welles was fascinated because this guy was using market research to program what movies he could make that he could sell to independent theater chains.
Oh.
And what Orson Welles liked about it was the fact that you could almost predict within a reasonable amount what type of movie you was going to make money, which is important in the movie business.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you can predict. Movie studios still have major flops as well as surprising successes. So there's like a variable in that. But movie studios do that now.
Yeah.
I'm sure TV studios do that as well. You know, there's market focus groups, but they also have tons of information based on what people have bought.
People want to see. Yeah.
Where they bought it, where something is popular. So there's it's almost the case of so much information, they still can't guarantee a hit.
Yeah.
You know, that's the, why you see sequels to stuff or remakes or whatever.
Yeah, because if they like it once, they'll like it 20 times. Yeah.
So how AI fits into that, I don't know, except that you could say maybe at some point, they're saying by the end of the year that someone would be able to generate a full movie in AI.
I heard you could do storyboards and stuff now, like for commercials.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I need a guy to walk in and pick up a bottle, and you could do little, like, you know, like models, like an animated thing, you know.
I mean, all of it's meant to... someone's going to lose work over it.
Yeah.
Just like Photoshop put people out of business.
Somebody will come up with a newer thing. I went to school. I went to be an illustrator. And I remember in 87, they said, you know, there's this program called Photoshop that's going to put all you hand-drawn illustrators out of business. It didn't do it right away.
No, but it did
a big impact,
They could do it cheaper.
They could do it cheaper instead of paying me to sit there and draw it. I could make a filter to make it look like...
Takes a picture of some models, and then do some Photoshop filtering.
And make it look like it's been brush stroked, like it's been watercolored or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of similar.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where we go. The worst part about all of this is that there should be some regulation to it. Mm. And as people...
I just think it's another thing that makes us lazy.
Well, it makes you lazy, but here's the thing. At what point do you... I mean, people already believe lies that are told online.
Yeah.
How more effective is that lie when you see a picture of Donald Trump shaking hands with an alien in Roswell in 1948? You know, and you go...
It was 1957, Jerry. Come on. Everybody knows. Duh.
How are you going to believe that? You know?
Even now with the deep fakes and stuff?
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying,
that's
though.
Scary. Sometimes I go, how do they know it's not really Putin?
Yeah.
At a rally, because it's just a computer-generated
image. Well, today on Twitter, I was looking, and somebody had posted this picture, and it was a picture of Donald Trump, you know, surrounded by Africans.
Yeah.
I don't remember if it was in Africa, but it was like, you know, and the headline says, you know, Biden hasn't gone, you know, to Africa or wherever it was.
Yeah.
And they said this picture was AI-generated.
Oh.
But we knew that because Trump wouldn't be standing in the middle of Africa.
Yeah.
He would be in the middle of his country club or whatever.
Yeah.
But I mean, all you need to show people is photographic stuff.
Yeah.
And we've, for how many years we've seen pictures of UFOs, and it's always like, oh, why is that picture so blurry?
It's like the moon landed. It's like the moon landed all over again. My mom never believed
it. Most times pictures of UFOs are blurry.
Yeah.
Because they're far away.
Yeah.
Just like you trying to take a picture,
of that dog of in the car today when I was like driving.
I'm saying that your cameras, all these things have gotten better.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the cameras have gotten better. You can shoot at night, right?
Yeah.
Low light source. All the while that's happening is now you have the ability to fake stuff more convincingly. Just like I go down that rabbit hole once in a while looking at UFO stuff because it's just as a fun thing, it intrigues me.
And then you see this footage, you're like,
and then
oh
you
my
go,
God.
You say, wow, this looks really amazing. And then you think, well, they can do this.
Faint.
You can do this in special effects. Or you could have a drone with a UFO body and fly it around and you don't have anything to match scale.
Yeah.
You know, it just, so it makes you not want to believe anything. That's the problem.
Yep.
So it takes away your confidence that anything's real.
Yeah.
Right?
But
the phone call, it's a Matrix phone call for you, Mitch.
No.
Go answer that.
Here's what I like, though. I like certain comics done in the 80s. I like the artwork, the John Byrne style.
Yep.
But now I can go, imagine if I could go to a computer and type in, draw me X-Men story with, you know, Nightcrawler, Cyclops, Wolverine, the original 80s.
And Batman.
And Batman.
Right.
Drawn in John Byrne style.
Right.
And, you know, and with Chris Claremont writing it. First off, it would be a novel because Chris used to write a lot of copy.
Right.
But it would be Byrne style. I would buy that because...
But what if
I don't read
you're
X-Men
not
now.
Buy it. You're doing it for free.
But if someone made it, I'd buy it.
The problem is that infringes on Byrne.
Well, maybe somebody draws
it. It infringes on Claremont and it infringes on Marvel.
Yeah.
So unless Marvel generates it, this is the problem, and this is why everybody's worried, is that the companies will use it to eliminate having somebody. But it's still built on the hard work of somebody.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like you're going, okay, do me an X-Men story with again, if you're using the style of somebody, you're still building it on somebody's style. You could say it's already
happened before, though. They used to build large set models and matte paintings and one-to-one scale for, like, the James Bond, you know, right. Star Wars. But now it's all green screen, yeah. And they do all those effects on the computer.
But people are still making those.
Yeah, but the machine's doing a lot of the heavy lifting.
But there's still people programming, and there's still people doing art
for
on
now.
Those machines. That's what I'm saying.
But once they build those models,
yeah.
They, you know, like they do the Clone Wars, they do all the different models right. of the characters. And it's just a matter of picking and choosing which one you want, and then
but
somebody
still,
does the voiceover.
At this point, people are still building those.
Yeah.
So, you know.
For now, yeah.
I mean, like, you can, they would sculpt things in a program called Maya 3D.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of 3D programs. So basically, you're creating a 3D computer model
yeah.
that can then be clothed or painted or whatever. But well, that's still the basic thing, is somebody has to make it.
Here's like a 3D printer, because I saw, what's his name? Chai Chester's coming to my show. Did you? He made a Daredevil mask on a 3D printer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what he's doing. I don't know if he's like saving the streets of Stanford at night as the man without fear, but he actually made the headpiece, the cowl of Daredevil. Maybe he's going to bring it to the show. I don't know.
Is he going to wear it?
What show? Oh, that would be Terrificon, July 28th to the 30th at the Mohegan Sun. Tickets on sale now. But yeah, I don't know what he's doing with it. I got to ask him. But it looks nice. I mean, it looks like
right.
it would if it was real, but it is real now. So he made this whole thing and he puts it on his head. And it looks like Daredevil's
right.
mask.
Right.
Why? But one would say he just took the work out of the tool and die companies. Or
he could have bought a Daredevil mask.
He could have bought one. But he's been making it
yeah.
for a couple months now. I've been watching him
well,
show updates on
it. I'm going to throw this at you.
What?
AI and all that involved. But what about virtual reality?
Yeah.
Now, virtual reality could replace a comic convention.
Oh. Right? I wish it would.
No, I'm just saying.
Because then they wouldn't have to deal
so,
with the
so you go
drama.
Through a, say
I
somebody's...
I just go put my headset on, and I'm walking through the floor. There's no more smells.
There's no more money.
It doesn't smell.
You're not making any money off it.
No.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, say somebody does
no.
a VR...
Well, they tried doing those VR
I'm saying you take
it.
You could do a VR, you could
COVID.
Build a... I'm saying a full
yeah.
convention experience of San Diego Con.
Oh, okay.
You put your VR goggles
and,
on.
And someone shoves you and pushes you.
The yeah. whole thing.
Yeah.
You go and you buy stuff from
yeah,
different
yeah.
people. You do the whole thing.
Yeah.
Who makes money off of it? The guy who came up with the VR thing.
Yeah. I would say so.
See,
yeah.
that's what I'm saying. It literally could affect anything and everything. You know, what are we left with? We're left with food that we eat.
Yeah.
Right? Because you can't have
artificial,
you can't have
well,
VR food.
As far as you know.
I'm just saying. So you're stuck with certain things that are going to be in person, but at what point do you think about how many, if you have a, like you said, you're talking about have a problem with your credit card or whatever,
yeah, yeah.
it's already frustrating to call or to go online through the chatbots
yeah.
because the chatbots don't give you what you want, but yet they go, was this a satisfactory experience?
Yeah, yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
no.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So imagine how much more frustrating that would be if you're dealing with some kind of AR or V, you know, like a,
yeah.
AI thing that's you know supposed to answer your questions, but is actually just lying to you.
No, but there's some things that are amazing. They had a walkthrough before it burned down. That somebody had made a Cathedral Notre Dame walkthrough,
yeah.
so you could put that headset on,
yeah, yeah.
and it was literally walking through the raptors, walking
yeah.
through the belfry, everything. And they used that technology to help rebuild
yeah.
it. Yeah, because somebody
yeah.
had gone down.
Yeah.
But that's kind of a cool thing, though. I mean,
it
you
is.
Could literally sit in your house, walk around as if you were on top of the chapel
yeah.
and looking down at all this.
But
things.
Then, I mean,
but that's cool.
The tip-off that Apple is about to introduce a VR headset.
Oh, a new one?
There's rumors for a while about it.
Yeah.
Is that there's money in it.
Yeah.
So, again, who gets the money? Like,
well,
if they
Apple
do San Diego,
then,
if they
yeah.
do a San Diego Comic-Con thing, does San Diego Comic-Con then get some portion of... of the amount of people who choose to do that as a VR or, you know, a virtual reality experience. I mean, there's so many things that kind of, whenever a new technology comes along, somebody tries to apply it.
Mm.
And whenever the technology is new, everybody says, well, this will help this,
you know,
all these great, it'll help in all these great ways, but it's ultimately going to turn into spam
porn.
And porn.
Porn,
yeah.
yeah. That's how everything makes money.
It's like, oh,
that's how the VCRs
make money.
We'll
be able to diagnose your injuries, and we'll be able to do all this stuff. And it's like, well, yeah, you could, because those are the higher elevated ideas. But
you could sell porn.
It's going to be avenue for porn or for scamming people out of their.
That's how the videotapes machine sold. That's how computers, internet sold. I think that's like the number one thing downloaded on the internet, besides puppy videos. Because who doesn't want to see a cute little puppy video every day? I might be in watching those things.
I'm saying, and again, it's going to happen.
The VR thing? Oh, God.
Well, I mean, all of this is going to happen. The problem, as somebody had made a point, is that there really needs to be, at the very least, there needs to be some standards for, say, like the AI to have a watermark that is available to identify itself as an AI creation rather than selling it as, yes, this is actually a picture.
You know what? It's funny you mentioned this today, because I was thinking about my grandparents, of all people. And I remember being a kid, and Sunday night would come around, and my grandmother would make spaghetti, meatballs, sauce. That was usually a ziti thing on a Sunday night. And I'd be over at my grandparents' house, and she'd make it and be eating around 5 or 6 o'clock. And then they'd go watch Lawrence Welk in the next room on the TV. Channel 9 had him. And then they'd watch 60 Minutes, because that's where you'd watch Mike Wallace tell you about the world. Because I always wanted to watch Disney.
Right.
That was on at the same time, 7 o'clock. But no, it was over my grandparents, so you had to watch. I'm Andy Rooney. Hear me bitch and moan about
it. He was the best part of 60 Minutes.
I know, you had to wait to it. So, but I'm sitting there going, but for some brief moment, I was typing on the way. Maybe because my kids moved out of my house now, and my wife was watching 60 Minutes the other day, and I had a flashback. And as a kid, I thought that was it. That was the most serene, peaceful existence you could have. You got a full belly. It was Sunday night. All your work was done. The laundry was folded and put away. It was a cool night out. The windows are open, and you're watching 60 Minutes, and that's it. And pretty soon you go to bed and start the whole thing. But that little brief moment of solace was all there is. That's all people are looking for, whether they get it through a virtual reality headset or they get it from just sitting there. I think most people really want to be left alone. Maybe it's just me. I want to be sitting at my table. Either I'm drawing a picture, or I'm reading a comic book, or this, that. But that's it. I don't think anybody wants to deal with anybody else. Ultimately, that's all they want.
You can't assume everybody's like you.
I'm pretty sure that most people would be happy if they
were by themselves. I think it's a male thing, probably wanting to be by yourself doing your thing or whatever.
Really? Just want to be. No, Sharon's
not everybody's the same.
She's reading her book over there, or she'll do her yoga or something like that.
If that were the case, people wouldn't go to concerts, and they wouldn't go to malls, and they wouldn't go to movies.
But they don't do it all the time, though.
I'm just saying.
Young people do.
Yeah.
I think Pat goes to a lot of
people like their, they like their solitude. I mean, I do. My brother asked me, he said, because he plays, he's 80, he plays pickleball.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And he says, don't you, why don't you get in the pickleball league or something? Yeah. I said, I like doing stuff by myself.
Yeah, I do.
If I go out for a run, I don't even want to see neighbors.
Oh, I know. I do. You know? Why do you think I take the dog into the woods? People go, they're going to find you dead. Why? Because you go off into nowhere with his dog. And I go, I don't want to talk to him.
Yeah.
But amazingly, you're Mr. Terrificon. You're the guy that's out there shaking hands. That's my job.
Yeah.
Like the other day, we were at a party, and my wife was telling people what I did, and they were like, oh, who's coming to the show? Oh, do you have a flyer? And I said, I'm not working right now. And I didn't mean to be like a dick, but I didn't have.
And you had your big Terrificon shirt on.
No, I didn't have it. I didn't have anything. They're like, oh, you're on the radio.
Stop bothering me.
You're on the radio.
But Mitch, you're handing out flyers at this party.
The lady said the funniest, she was a crossing guard. And she said, the funniest thing was, I was listening to the Chaz and AJ radio show, and you were on it because she's there early in the morning with the crossing guard. And she goes, and I heard you talking about stuff. And then I look up, and there you are walking across the street with the dog. I go, yeah, as soon as I'm done with the radio, I take Harley out at 7 in the morning. She goes, I just thought that was bizarre because a minute ago you were cracking jokes and being, like, goofy. And now you're like, leave me the hell alone. I said, because that was my job. I don't want to be on the radio.
I want to be alone.
I think people want to be famous. I don't know why, though.
Well, you know what?
Why? Why do they want stuff given to them for free?
Well, here's the thing. Remember,
we know a guy.
But when we were kids, there was we get that question. And I remember getting
it.
You
want to be rich or famous?
But you want to be rich or famous?
I'd want to be rich.
And the thing is, most people want to be rich and famous.
No, you can't have both.
No, but I'm saying they want both, but they'll settle for famous even if they're poor. I mean, that's the concept of people. Because
people know who you are when you walk in a room?
People feel there's validation in the fact that other people are watching them or like them.
Why?
human beings are like that.
I guess. Social media is a big deal.
Yeah.
People want to know that somebody clicked like on their little picture today.
Well, no, there's definitely a brain function that goes on.
Oh, there is. You get a little endorphin that comes through. You're like, oh, wow, somebody likes me.
But the same thing, I think, happens with any, you know, positive human interaction.
Yeah. Best part in church when I was a kid is when everyone would turn to shake each other's hand. That was the highlight of the church.
And you wouldn't shake?
No.
Say, leave me alone. I'm done. I'm not working.
Years later, I'd just do the head bob. They were like, what a dick. Right in front of church. What if Jesus was next to you? I remember that. The guy said,
I wouldn't shake his hand. It's going to be bleeding.
It's got a big hole through it. It's got a spike coming out of it. I remember that's what the guy said, Father Montefico. He comes out and goes, well, you guys are in church. When it's time to show, you know, peace to our neighbor, I want you to turn to the person to your left, your right, and shake their hand as if it was Jesus. What would you do if Jesus was right next to you? And my friend Brian Gemmel, I remember to this day, goes, I would die. Honestly, Father, if I turned and there was Jesus sitting next to me, I think I would just have a heart attack and die. I couldn't stop laughing at that answer. He's like, you're being a comedian, Mr. Gemmel. He's like, no, you just asked me what I would do. And I said, that's what I would do. Why are you yelling at me? You don't like the answer? I gave you my answer.
I just think your friend could be a comedian.
Oh, everybody was funny. Everybody in Catholic school is a comedian because it's so absurd. Uh-oh, Mitch just lost half the Catholics going to his show. As we're sitting there in our little white shirts with our little navy ties and our gray pants and black shoes, and I remember the best one is we used to, did you ever have an ad book? Did you ever have to do one of those in school? You'd go around the neighborhood to all, like, the barbers and the coffee shops and the liquor stores.
I didn't go to a Catholic school.
It was a fundraiser. So what they would do is they would sell candy bars. Yeah, we did that too. But they would sell this ad book, and they would go to the local businesses, and they'd put an ad, like a business card or a half page, like, best of luck to the class of whatever.
It's one
of these things.
Yeah.
And every year they would have a new one, and they would raise money. And who gets this ad book? Why do you want this book? Oh, well, the people that bought ad, they get a copy of it.
Right.
To do what? To look at it? To see, like, the other people?
Look, that's my ad.
Is it a directory? Is it like a... It's kind of like a Yellow Pages, I guess, right? So I remember the guy coming in. I can't remember his name. He was from the accounting office at our high school. And he told us... here was his pep talk. Because he gave us the ad stuff. He goes, boys, I want you to go out this weekend. I want you to knock on those doors. Back then, you can do that. In the 80s, there weren't any murderers and pedophiles. They didn't invent that stuff
yet. You got the Glenn Ross.
Here's
your leads.
We did. Always be Catholic. ABC. So we go out there, and he literally, I got to remember this guy's name. So he's going, when you go out there, it was like Glenn Ross. What did you drive today? Well, I don't drive. I'm an underage child.
What kind of bicycle do you have?
I brought a Schwinn 10 speed, not your Huffy with your banana seat. You understand me? You know what my name is? Fuck you. That's what my name is. And I shouldn't be swearing because I'm in Catholic school. So anyway, he goes up and goes, when you sell these ads, kids, I want you to think about one thing. You're not selling them for me. You're not selling them for the school. You're not even selling them for your parents. What you're selling them is for what's up there on that wall. And he took his finger and he pointed to the crucifix on the wall. But I looked over and I said, paint? And the whole room erupted. And he goes, what did you say, Halleck? I go, you said what we're selling these ads for and wasting our time on the weekends walking around to strangers and begging them for money is up there on that wall. And I said, paint. I got so much trouble for that. He wanted to punch me in the throat right there.
Well, there's your Jesus for
you. There's my Jesus for me.
There's your Jesus for you.
Come here. If Jesus was here,
come here,
and you told him, that you don't want to sell ads for him and his religion, he'd punch you in the throat. Bam. Thanks, Jesus. Would you like another?
Would you like to hang up on that cross for an hour?
Exactly. I died for your sins. So I'm sitting here thinking to myself.
And suddenly Fat Tony.
Based on that theory he had. So forget Jesus dying for all of mankind's sins. He's up there on a cross going, oh man, I hope they sell ads to the barbershop down the street because I'm really starting to have trouble breathing up here. It's really not looking good. I hope they buy a full page ad and not just a business card ad. So I don't know where we went to on this route, but that's what I was trying to tell you, what people want. Some people are very happy going to church and did you see this show? Here's a train of thought. Did you see the one with the Scarlet Witch on HBO where she has an affair with this ugly man? this blonde-haired blonde.
Oh, Jesse Plemons.
I don't know who the hell he was.
From Breaking Bad.
Okay, yeah. Wherever he's from, he needs to go back, because I've never seen, and God, I'm sure he's a nice man. I'm sure he's very kind to his family.
He's married to Kirsten Dunst.
Are you shitting me? Does he look like that all the time with the blonde eyebrows and blonde hair? That is one of the most hideous. Does he have that bad skin, or was that makeup?
I don't know.
I'm watching this. Sharon goes, that is one of the most grotesque looking men I've ever seen in my life. I go, I'm with you, sister. I don't know why the Scarlet Witch would want to go bang this guy. But again, it's just a TV show. Have you watched it? It's called Passions.
No, I know it's...
In
it's,
the Midwest, they're all Methodists. They're singing like crazy. They're singing Jeremiah Had a Bullfight. It was so 70s, I was getting the heebie-jeebies watching it. Because I remember all that dark paneling and the dark couches and the weird ceramic ashtrays and shit. And then she just goes up to him and she goes, I think we should have an affair. And they plot out like all the reasons why they should have the affair. And then they meet on the outskirts of town. You know, like she brings a picnic basket.
So is there spoilers involved? Because I may watch it now.
Oh, go ahead and watch it. Because I like Lizzie Olsen. She's a cool kid. I like her. But this guy that she chooses to have the affair with, my Christ, there's like 20 other guys that are more eligible than this. He looks like the Mugatu from the Star Trek.
Jesse Plemons.
He looks like a blonde ape.
He was like on Breaking Bad, and he was really skinny. And then when they made Breaking Bad,
really?
Camino, whatever the
ate something?
TV movie,
he's not skinny.
It was taking place in that same time frame.
Yeah,
and he suddenly unexplainably
got fat. He looks sausage. You know what it is? This whole thing's out in the Midwest.
He was on Fargo. He was on.
Oh, he's perfect for
Fargo.
That show.
He's perfect. Yeah.
Oh my God, this whole thing is out there. She's out. I think they're out in Indiana or Iowa, one of those Midwestern places that nobody goes to. Again, apologies to anybody out in Sioux City. Way to go. Buckeye State,
please,
right?
Please come to my show.
Come to my show, Iowonians. is that what they call themselves?
Iowans.
Ayahuascas.
Iowans.
Whatever. It's just... So anyway, she has an affair with a guy.
So you're basically...
You know who's in it too? Christian Ritter.
But you're judging this guy by
Jessica,
his looks.
Oh, I think anybody would. Jessica Jones is in this
and
movie,
it fits
too.
It so fits your Catholic upbringing.
Oh, yeah. We went from... No, because this is all about religion. If you watch that show, they're all religious. They're all for the church. They all do these fundraisers. They're all baking, like, blueberry pies and shit like that. And, you know, but then they're all banging like rabbits.
But they're all... Those are all the people who are voting for Trump.
I don't know. This was back in the 70s. It was this... You're obsessed with that Trump. I think you want to marry him. That's what it comes down to. Deep down, Jerry wants to date him. You and him, holding hands. He's got the best artist here. He's the greatest Superman artist ever. Forget that. We got the best.
Yeah,
we got to
draw portraits of him as Superman.
Oh, that'd be fisting. Ask your AI for that.
Yeah, well, I'm sure
it
they've already been doing that.
It nukes the world all of a sudden. Must destroy planet.
Have you seen
that? See.
I've been noticing like people have been doing that.
Anyway, watch that show, Lizzie Olsen.
For creating NFTs as well.
Oh, he's still selling that shit? Those bubblegum cards he was selling?
And stuff, yeah.
Oh my God, that was horrendous. They found out he was taking clip art and putting heads on clip art, you know?
But how is that different?
It was like What Me Worry underneath, you know? Like Al Feldstein. You folded the thing in half of the Trump folded and it made a big middle finger. Who knew? God bless Al. Passed away. Not Al Feldstein. The other guy, Al Jaffe. Al Feldstein's another guy.
Yeah, but see, you're correcting yourself, but you're
making
it like
myself.
I just said
well,
that.
Well, I know, but like, my brain has tapped me in the shoulder. The AI that I call the brain in here. You don't want to be in here. Because half the time it's thinking about, well, let's see, I got to go walk the dog, maybe draw a picture. Wonder
so you
if
buy
I'm
a robot to walk your dog.
I could.
Get one of those Roombas.
Can I
just
get
train it to
can
go
I get
outside?
Can I get an electronic version of John Suntress?
No, you just get the Roomba.
No.
With a leash and then just train it to go a certain way.
I just had this weird image of John Suntress on a leash walking around my house vacuuming. John Suntress is the proprietor and host of The Word Balloon. Listen to it right now on most of your local stations. Terrificon tickets are on sale at selected comic books. I felt like a movie theater.
Well, could
coming
you just
soon
print
to
those
selected
out at home?
Theater. Yeah, now you can.
I mean, like,
we
got to
buy it.
With AI?
No.
And just make a Terrificon.
I think they should just do a new show called Ay, Ay, Ay.
Ay,
Ay, Ay. Ay, caramba. But what other show?
They did a funny Simpsons.
You know what?
Finale was that Krusty, like, decides to open a university or school.
Yeah.
Clown school.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it was actually very good.
I think they should have AI write a Simpsons and no one would know the difference because it's been on for 40 years now.
But I mean, here's
39.
That's what I was saying, though. From if you look at it, it's not like a brilliant person. It's just something that's able to aggregate a tremendous ton of information.
Yeah.
So it's like if you had some kind of perfect memory and you said, oh, I want to do this drawing of this and this and combine them.
Yeah.
And you had the ability to immediately find that because you remembered every drawing you ever saw.
Yeah.
That's what an AI is.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's some kind of God-level thing.
It will be.
It's just like the perfect copy machine.
But if you're a stupid person, it is.
I'm just saying. An artist could say, if you threw at a convention, said, this happens when someone asks for a sketch. They say, I want this, and then I want Dolly Parton as a centaur.
I've done that.
You know, an AI can do that, of course, but...
When I used to draw at kids' parties, oh my God, I do caricatures, and the mothers would stand behind you. Oh, she loves the guitar. Okay. Can you draw on a horse playing the guitar? What is she, Lady Godiva?
No.
Okay. Meanwhile, the kids sit here. The kids bored out of her mind. Gene Autry and what's his wife's name? Gene Autry's. Dale Evans, I'm thinking.
That was Roy Rogers.
Right? Yeah. So, but the kids would just want to go.
Yeah.
They want to go play with their friends. And the parents would be behind me.
Now, did they pay you?
Yeah. So, depends on the gig.
But I'm saying, most parents... The parents are always projecting what they want on their kids.
I know. I used to see it in front of me. These poor kids would just look at me
they do that at comic shows, too. They come to you.
Oh, do they really?
It's like this kid is 4 years old. Yeah. And, this is your favorite comic was the Batman movie comic. And you're like, okay, I think you're talking about you.
Yeah. You're projecting. I see
you want a free drawing or something.
No, but I remember the mother would come up to me like, oh, this is Isabel. She loves ballerina or ballet. Could you draw her as a ballet? Oh, okay, yeah. But she also loves, a lizard. She has a pet lizard. Oh, do you want her to draw Hinky the lizard? Hinky, okay, yeah, all right. What kind? Is it an iguana? Oh, no, I don't know. It's a chameleon. Oh, okay. Make its eyes go. And I'm sitting there going, Jesus God, you're only paying $20 for this. What do you want, Mona Lisa?
Well, see, they can do AI now.
That's why I don't do it anymore.
They'll create a little
video. Well, I'll tell you why I stopped doing it. Because there's one, in the caricature, you have to find one feature about a person's face. Sometimes they have multiple features, like that hideous guy.
There's a difference between caricature and, say, like cartooning. Editorial cartooning or whatever.
I would accentuate a certain thing.
If someone's buying something, they don't want a picture of their big nose.
Well, that's what happened.
Or their big jaw.
That's what happened. This young girl comes up, beautiful girl, very pleasant, good sense of humor. She'd have to be because the schnoz was big as... Anyway, an anteater. So she had a large nose, and I was drawing her, and the mom's like, make this, make that. And you look at the girl's eyes, and she's probably thinking one thing, please don't draw me with a big nose. Please don't draw me with a big nose.
This is going to be hanging up on the wall for 30 years.
So the first thing I do with the pencil is like, wow, Jimmy Durante. So I was like, and I didn't know, I threw it away.
It's because you're a people person, Mitch.
I am, I love people.
You know how to screw people over.
I know.
The girl said, mad.
I'm going to find you, Mr. Halleck, and I will kill you.
Well, no, they're all out there incubating right now. They're waiting until they're old enough they can come
to the legions of anti-Mitches. Kill him.
When
kill
I was him. Eight, you did
he
this
drew my nose.
It ruined my school
It's
years.
Like, did you ever read the book, excuse me, Moonraker? Did you ever read that? Hugo Drax? Boy, we're all over the place today.
I read most of the
Bond. I was in a James Bond thing one summer. Because then I realized they were all connected. And the OCD in me, it was like, they are? Because I thought they were based on the order of the movies.
No.
Dr. No was like book 5. Yeah. And Casino Royale is book 1. So once you know that there's a whole universe, I had to read them all in order. But I remember the Moonraker book. It's the villain's name is Hugo Drax.
Yeah.
And the reason why he wanted to take over the world some is because he had what they were called ogre teeth, and it was just teeth that are spaced apart. You know how they David Letterman had a gap in his teeth. So at the end of the book, James Bond is about to be killed by Hugo Drax or whatever, and he goes, you're just mean to people because you have ogre teeth, and that's why you've been this way and everyone hates you. And Hugo Drax is like, shut up, Mr. Bond, shut up, I'm gonna bite you with my hideous teeth. But that was the villain's motivation at the end of the book, is because he had bad teeth.
It was written in what, the 60s?
1960s. Yeah. All of England had bad teeth in the early 60s because there was no dental program or something.
Very much a class thing then.
It was a thing. So that's what I was like, this is what the villain's based on? Bad teeth?
Man, it's funny. Was that the one that introduced Jaws?
That's funny. Yeah, you're
so
right.
Somebody read that and went, okay, we got Richard Keel with big metal teeth.
Maybe that's why. And Holly Goodhead was the the scientist that he encounters.
Here's the thing, but
I'm saying, remember, I would have been the guy at the kids' party that right. drew Hugo Drax right, with the ogre teeth,
and then
he destroyed, and I became a Bond villain.
Yeah. So you've got plenty of these people incubating to be Bond.
It's
villains.
All my fault. When they finally launched the nuclear Putin, I'm pretty sure I drew him at a kids' party.
Drew his ears
Look
big
at that little guy with the big ears. He looks like the guy from
fox.
Deliverance.
Yeah, right.
Hey boy, how about a song? Anyway, what were you gonna say about my army of
hatred? I was
going
to say, one of the things that I think, if we're worrying about AI...
No, you are. I'm worried about what I'm having for lunch tomorrow.
The thing is that people always want something different.
Yeah.
And somebody still has to come up with something different or something
That's
interesting.
That's why Baskin-Robbins has 31 flavors.
But it'll be copied immediately.
Yes.
So, but I see people, and I think, you know...
Are you worried this putting your friends out of work? Does it come down to you're worried about starving artists?
Will. Yeah. I mean, I feel bad for the artists.
What about the
community?
Low sales in comics? That's been putting people out of work for years.
Yeah. But that's because there's too many...
Too many what?
I think there's too many varieties of things, and there's not... Basically, your audience is totally divided up.
In no offense to any of my guests, I think the quality of storytelling has gone out the window in the last couple of years. I think... Yeah. There's a handful of writers that do a good job, but a lot of the stuff that's put out, not that I'm one to say what should be put out and shouldn't be put out, but some of the stuff is very weak.
Yeah.
That you can flip through it in 5 minutes.
But think of it
you paid $5 for that story.
Think of it in terms of what I just said. Think about how much, like Marvel, DC, any comic publisher used to have a limited number of books they could produce.
Right.
Some of it initially was determined by how many spaces were on the newsstand.
And the distribution.
So we can only do
8 books a month, like Marvel.
Or 12 books or 25 books.
Yeah.
They also have a limitation for how many people are available to do those books because there's competition with other publishers.
Yeah.
There's a finite pool of people.
Yeah.
As the direct market came in and the different Marvel and DC started trying to flood the market.
Yeah.
And put out more books. To do that, you need to bring in more people, right? So that worked for a while, but then there's a point where the rates started going down. So the rates go down, you kind of alienate people. Maybe they look for other industries to go into, or they look for better jobs or whatever, get tired of it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're in a situation now where you're doing books that have... And again, no, nothing wrong with it,
no.
But you have books with limited commercial appeal. Your divided audience is going to buy maybe 5,000 of that book.
If
and
that.
Somebody's going to, you know what I mean? Like your main characters are still what they're putting out. Someone's going to buy Superman. Someone's going to buy Aliens as a movie property, whatever.
Yeah.
There's things that are better known. There's probably a better chance for a wider audience. So you've divided the audience by being able to cater in a way. Mm-hmm. So you get people who complain when their favorite book gets canceled.
Yeah.
Because it's only selling 2,000 copies.
Yeah.
That's valid to be upset, but it happens all the time. It's everything is still based on a mass market.
Yeah.
You know. I just think like with I mean, look at it. The biggest thing to me is not so much that art's gone downhill or writing's gone downhill. It's that everybody's trying to do a lot of projects. And there is a finite amount of people doing it. But a lot of it still comes from that editorial side.
Mm-hmm.
And the companies have continuously been firing people.
Yeah.
So who are they going to fire? They're going to fire people who are getting paid better, who are probably more experienced. So you're losing a lot of experience. You're losing a lot of people who could even maybe help a young artist or a young writer. And you're replacing them or leaving in place people who are doing it for a couple of years who don't have the vast experience.
Do you think the editors are not as strong as they used to be?
They're not allowed to be, maybe.
Really? Why?
No, because everything's decisions are coming from higher
sales.
Up. They're coming from higher up. I mean, that's the big difference, I think, in the last 30 years, is that there's not as many calls that an editor can make.
Yeah.
You know, like, I want this guy on my book.
They don't pick that anymore?
They didn't have it during, I think, much during the Dio's era.
No.
At DC. I don't know if there's a parallel at Marvel. I'm not sure, but I know...
Is that because of the Image thing happened?
It's because it's like a clearinghouse thing. It's like, yeah, you know, we're dictating the main storylines. We're working with a handful of high-profile, from their point of view, high-profile writers. Mm-hmm. We're working out these stories, and you just facilitate it. You know, as the editor, it's like you're working on... Whatever.
So the editor's Bendis. Really just driving deadlines, like calling you up, hey, I need 20 pages this week, I need 10 pages.
I don't even think they're doing
that's a production
that.
Manager.
But I'm saying, like, a lot of people don't have the experience to be wrangling, you know, or hurting people.
That's why books are late?
They let them happen.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I've been on books where
when
I knew
when did you start to see
slow.
That happen?
Again, in the it's we're 90s. Now in 23, so I would say... It started happening in the 2000s.
Yeah, because there was no way that shit would fly in the 80s. Because well, it was no. Like, you would just hear a nightmare story of Jim Shooter killing people if they didn't get the 12 issues of Secret Wars
could,
out on time.
You could specifically put that at... I mean, again, I'm
now,
not
why
blaming
was
the
that
Dio,
such a,
but...
No, but why was that such a big thing?
Late shipping became a big thing with him.
Because they were losing sales
because
in the stores?
Because he was doing... I don't... Maybe there's a more desperation, but I know that in during the Dio stuff is that Dan... would take a personal interest in something.
Yeah.
So if he was the guy who hired the writer, for example, yeah. The writer, some low-level, mid-level movie guy, TV guy, whatever, he's got like a final pass at it. It's like, oh, I don't like this. I don't care if it's late. We're going to redo the last 10 pages or we're going to whatever they do. They didn't used to do that. You know, I mean, like the managing editors were supposed to, they were important in the direction of, say, the year's worth of stories.
Yeah.
But even Shooter, I mean, he did start, that's when he started going bad, was when he started making too many interfering things at the late stage.
Yeah.
Comics always work on an assembly line.
Yeah.
You can't disrupt one that's just about to go to the printer without affecting the ones that are coming after it. So you screwed up the deadline. Not only for that month, you screwed up the deadline
for
many
DC,
months.
For DC, the tie-in started wrecking it.
It's tie-ins, and it's also this last-minute change stuff.
Yeah.
They never used to do last-minute changes.
Well, now they can.
They used to... I mean, again, it was like... A good example, like when Dick Giordano was doing it, Dick would look at the books when they came. They would get the printer proofs.
Yeah.
He would look at books at that stage. He trusted the people he hired at that point, and he was a reader.
Yeah.
And if he had a problem with something, he could go, look... Maybe we don't like the direction of this, but they wouldn't pull a book from
no,
the printer.
No, by that point, it's already going to press.
That's what I'm saying. So, you know, I was personally involved in a couple things that affected me where stuff was changed when it was ready to go to the printer and suddenly, oh, no, you can't do this or that.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, it's valid to have concerns if he wants to do that, but he has to do that earlier in the procedure.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you do it late like that, all you're doing is screwing the books that come afterwards. That's
yeah,
what
yeah.
I'm saying. So you, once you screw the deadlines, once you make... Comics are pressure. There's high pressure. It's a young man's game, young woman's
game.
Yeah. But there's a lot of pressure making deadlines monthly. So they tried to address it by having an artist draw two issues and taking a month off or whatever. They have people doing less of a monthly book. So you don't have someone developing on a character... You don't have somebody basically visually developing on a character or owning a character because he's there for a storyline and then there's somebody
gone.
Else.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a whole bunch of things that happen in concert with certain decisions that, to me, they lose the momentum. You know, all the stuff that you and I remember liking.
Yeah.
You know, the
I used to love Marvel Premiere. That was one of my favorite books. Because
like
every
this,
month you'd get a new character. They would try something out.
Right.
Sometimes
but I mean,
it was like a pilot.
With a regular book, you go, oh, I really like Roy Thomas and Jabby Sema on Avengers, or I really like Frank Miller and Klaus Janson on Daredevil, or Byrne, or whatever.
Yeah.
Those are all long-term things where those guys were able to start, and maybe those first issues aren't great, but you could see the movement the improvements and
right,
the stories
got
into whatever it was, but it was a long-term thing. You can't get that if you have somebody do two issues and then another artist comes in and draws the characters differently.
Well, now they have teams.
Because from a reader point of view, you see stuff and you get a sense of continuity. It's not just story-wise, but it's also with the way things are drawn.
No, but I'm saying I noticed like you had Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale. You got Tom King and Mitch Gerads work together. It's like when you get a book by those two guys, you know it's going to be somewhat decent or good storytelling because they've worked together in the past and they have a rhythm together and there's a certain pattern.
But it's not like they're doing something where one guy's doing one issue and then he's gone.
No, 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 no. That's why it's so cool that Tom King is doing some of that. What's that, Danger Street?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of, like, he's taking these minor characters. It's almost like a Marvel premiere with, like, people that haven't been touched in years. And he's making new stories crafting around. I like that. As opposed to, oh, the 12th Batman book this week or the 9th Superman book this week. It's like, remember when you guys used to do different characters?
Yeah.
I remember that one of the better books was the Green Lantern Corps, when they had different Green Lanterns. You have Nort, remember the guy that looked like a dog? And then they have Chip, the little squirrel one. And there was just different freaking Green Lanterns. And there was the guy, Tomar Rock. What do you mean? Looks like a fish.
Yeah. But see, that's the funny thing. Cool. I remember when that, at the time.
It was mid-80s.
Well, when they were doing the book, I remember at some point, I remember talking to Carlin.
Yeah.
We were just talking about comics.
Yeah.
It was like, you know what? Hal Jordan is a boring character.
Yeah, but the other people, the cast was better.
They were smart to do that Legion and
Green Lantern Corps. Yeah, Killer Croc came in. And
ultimately, you could create characters that were more interesting.
Yeah.
Visually,
the young girl, I can't think of her name, with the little white dress and. It was orange skin.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, that's what... But I don't know what... I don't know. Maybe it's just a time frame. Maybe it's just because I grew up with those books.
But I do think, media's
they
changed.
They seem to take more chances.
Everything,
it seemed like they were
trying. Because everything wasn't... I mean, I think I told you this. There's a point where I think comics got scared.
And they went to old,
so
reliable.
It's like, in the old days, you'd have a fill-in, and maybe it wasn't a great fill-in.
Yeah.
But it saved you a month and you could get ahead on the book or whatever. And the audience generally was okay with it.
Yeah, as long as it was one-off.
But there's a certain point where I think maybe because of the comic audience coming at a comic store, they were much more picky.
Yeah.
That it was like, oh, if you do a bad story, you're killing the book.
I'm dropping the book,
You know, and that's different. I mean, I think that also shows the danger of catering directly to super fanatic versus like the newsstand, which was, it was casual, but it was also, you know, these were people who just read it and enjoyed it and maybe didn't save them in plastic bags or whatever.
But is that...
I think entertainment for them. It wasn't, you know...
I think that's what's happening with the movies now.
Yeah.
That they said, oh, well, they like this, so let's give it to them 30 times now.
Right.
And the Marvel one's starting to show its wear and tear because...
because they have
a formula. And it's like, oh, great. The girl gets the powers. She doesn't know what to do with them. She doesn't like them. Her parents don't know what she is.
We talked about this the last time,
I know.
Or before.
But
the
I think
idea
they
that
tried, with Ant-Man, they tried something different.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, I don't like that now. I like those little caper, you know, heist movies that they.
But they don't want to remake the same movie three times.
No. Because Hank Reed, who's been on all three of them.
Right.
James Gunn was on all three.
Yeah.
They always talk about, oh, James Gunn finished the trilogy.
Right.
Hank Reed did all three of the Ant-Man movies. Yeah. I mean, why don't you give that guy a little bit of a credit for trying
something. But the funny thing is, though, is that when you... I remember reading about the way Marvel works with... They would hire, like, an indie director for something. Like, they hired an indie director for Eternals.
Yeah.
And that person comes in, and they say, okay, we've got 40% of the movie's content worked out, storyboarded.
Yeah.
Here's the big action sequences. We want you to craft something that people will care about with the individual characters.
Oh, really? So the special effects team had already done the battles and all that?
That's part of them having the basically a big machine.
Yeah.
The stunt people are all the same people. The digital people are all the same people.
Oh, I didn't know that. No.
So the director is, they're hiring indie people because they want somebody to try to give a fresh approach to the human contacts or the whatever.
Okay.
So that's where I think, unfortunately, if someone goes too far to try to be indie with it, then the hardcore fans, though, this isn't the character I read 20 years ago.
Oh, like the Taiki Waititis?
Whatever.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it could be, again, the thinking about the Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
You know, is that people, they go, no one says, wow, those action sequences were great in Captain Marvel.
You're talking about Shazam or the...
No, the Marvel ones.
Oh, the Marvel
ones. And the thing is, those action sequences are always great in all those movies because they're very well thought out, they're well executed. The problem is the other percent of it is like the tail wagging the dog.
Yeah.
Like if you have the big set piece and they tell you, here's what's going to happen in this movie.
Yeah.
You write the fun and interesting stuff to happen in between those stunts.
Yeah.
That's not how the Marvel or that's not how the DC ones are built. So The DC ones might cost more because they each production has to create their own departments and stuff. They don't have that shared, you know, like Marvel does, with a shared design department and all that. But in a way, you can maybe be different all the way through with a movie like The Joker was, or even like Birds of Prey was.
Yeah.
Or like James Gunn doing his Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
It's different because it's not coming out of kind of a factory setting.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, he could be quirky all the way through to the special effects and to the designs.
Yeah.
So, I mean, again, there's just a lot of movies coming out.
I know.
So whether they're all brilliant, you're still going to be nitpicky, just like when I've told you this before, when Kirby or Ditko, those guys were great in their time.
Yeah.
And then they started aging, and the stuff maybe wasn't as interesting, and it's like, wow, what is Kirby doing with Black Panther or whatever?
Yeah.
So there's a tendency to kind of dismiss that stuff because they were great, and now you're seeing them just be good.
Yeah.
20 years later, it's like you go, that's actually pretty interesting. I can't believe he did this instead of doing Fantastic Four or whatever it is.
He was trying stuff. Yeah.
He was trying different stuff, and maybe it wasn't like he was competing with himself, you know? But all of the TV stuff that's on from DC Marvel, all this movie stuff is all pretty much spun out of 80s stuff.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny.
Oh, yeah. Titans
and all these Kirby concepts that people laughed at. The Eternals was a big movie. The elements of all these things are still out there, and they're being used. So it's like you basically take things for granted.
Yeah.
You know, this guy's so great. Like Neil Adams is another case. No one was better. So it's easy in a way to kind of like go, oh, yeah, did you see Neil's latest thing or whatever? And it was like, well, he can't compete because he's competing against himself.
Yeah.
Just like Kirby couldn't compete with 1970s Kirby.
Is that why Steranko walked away?
Steranko was smart in that way. It was like he put his stuff out, and he didn't have to live through a period where someone would go,
his older stuff was better.
Right. You know? But
no, I think about that because we did a thing about the Outland movie. Did you ever see his Outland? He did an adaptation of the movie Sean Connery, but it was for Heavy Metal magazine out in Europe. But Steranko drew the whole thing. Yeah. With it. It was all that, you know, the weird graphics and stuff. Yeah. But I'm like, I think that was the last long format book he did. That was 1980. And he never really did another thing after that. But, you know.
Well, he did that Captain America print around
9/11. No, I'm talking about storytelling, not just one-offs or something like that. But
I mean, it's hard.
I don't know, maybe it's something you walk away from. You do so your catcher in the rye, and you never do another thing.
I think we're in that midst with the Marvel movies in that we go, okay, these aren't as good as the earlier ones. Because, number one, they're not surprising.
No.
Because you know how they're going to be done.
That's the other thing.
Well, there's a lead-up, but also the second lead-up's never going to be as good.
No, because you've already seen it.
Right,
you've seen that trick. Yeah.
I mean, I think that's why stuff needs to reinvent itself. And we used, back when the... before the Christopher Nolan Batman, they were doing these big Batmans that just got campier and bigger and whatever. Yeah, yeah. And I used to talk to guys that I knew. It's like somebody needs to cleanse the palate and do a low budget, human only, no special effects.
And they did that with the Batman Begins. Yeah.
Except that was still a big budget.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was at least it was a reset.
New one now.
It's got to be.
I told you the big thing was it was fine, and then they tacked on that weird 20-minute. I got to save the city, and the floods come in. And I'm like, what is this? It seems like two different movies. It's like you had the one with the crime drama with the whole boss Maroney and all that stuff.
But it was the end of the storyline.
Suddenly it's like, I'm a big hero now. It's like, this is the same movie?
Well, it was him trying, I mean, I think it was them trying to make him
heroic,
relatable, heroic.
Yeah.
You know, so that was kind of new.
I think they go, we got to sell toys.
But that was kind of new for Batman to do, you know, having him in a daylight shot. Was definitely new.
No, but I'm not talking about the Dark Knight Rises. I'm talking about that last one that just came out.
Yeah, no, I know. But they show him in the sunrise.
Yeah, that's true.
But I think it succeeds if it's different, and it did succeed in being a little different.
Yeah.
You know, so in a way you go, well, did it all hang together? But it was kind of interesting that
I told you the Ant-Man, I think they tried something different. Like, you know, let's not bring in the Michael Peña again. Let's not bring in the Three Little Stooges guys.
Here's the thing, though. And
I wish he was in it, though. I was like...
He could have been in it easily. But here's the thing.
He could have been in The Office when they disappeared. Just a little... You need to see a little. See, people just like
when they come back.
He's a very popular character,
and then
not have a minute at all, or not acknowledge of where he is.
It's a 2-hour and 45-minute movie, right?
Yeah. It's like what I was waiting for him in the movie. I'm sitting there going, "Oh, even if he's in for a second, he's a fun actor to watch." And they just totally threw it out.
But like with Ant-Man. Think about it. We talked about that after Guardians.
Yeah.
Guardians also did like a little world building.
Yep. But they brought everybody back. Even they brought made it Rooker
interesting.
Back.
Yeah. No, I mean, they made the visuals interesting because we've seen that type of world building.
You know what I realized? Wars, there was a big plot hole at the end of Guardians, and I didn't realize it while we watched it. And then it totally in my face.
What?
At the very end of the movie, spoiler alert if you haven't seen it, when Peter Quill runs back to get that Zune player... And he goes out into space, and he's going to use the air hose to throw him to the other safe spaceship.
Right.
And something hits him and throws him off course, and he can't get there. And his face starts to explode from being exposed to the acid. What happened to his mask? His famous little Star-Lord behind the ear, a little button he would press and that.
But he didn't have
He didn't have it on him.
No.
And they said, well... I said, that, oh my God, I didn't even think of that watching, because he's had it in all the other movies. James Gunn actually broke it in the Ego fight with number two, and they showed the scene. I never caught it there. That's why Michael Rooker gives him a spacesuit and saves him because
he
can't go out into space, because they show when Kurt Russell's Ego knocks him to the ground, his mask falls off and it's split into two. It's like if you blink, you miss it. But James Gunn was smart enough to actually write that in. Like, there's a reason why. And I never even thought of it then either. Like,
so
why doesn't he do that?
Why,
he's like, his little space mask is broken.
Yeah.
And that's why Rooker has to save him at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's, you know, he dies. But the Russo brothers are making Infinity War. They don't know what James Gunn's doing over there. They're not paying attention. So when they go to do Star-Lord, he has him with his mask on, and he's wearing it when he shows up at the big end battle with Thanos and stuff. So when they went to James Gunn, he's like, he doesn't have that mask anymore. They go, what are you talking about? He goes, it broke at the end of the one I wrote. He got rid of it. He doesn't wear it. They go, oh, no, he's wearing an end gun. He's like, well, I didn't write that story. That was the Russo brothers wrote it. So there's that one little... It's not a plot hole because the guy who wrote the story knew it wasn't there. But if you don't talk... But that's what explains it.
Yeah, it was also interesting because he was talking about some of that in
the storyline.
Yeah,
like, that's not
what
he wrote.
Here's what you know needs to happen. Here's what I don't think needs to happen.
Yeah, they're like, oh, Gamora's gonna get killed, and here you go, buddy.
Well, because he was saying that in the interviews recently.
Yeah.
I think it was just in the Hollywood Reporter.
He had
actually cover story.
Oh, really? That was.
Yeah. So he was talking about how in the second one, Gamora was gonna die.
Right.
And then
he moved it to
Rooker's
said
as
character.
He was doing it was like, you know, it made more sense because they had just become kind of a couple.
Right. And he did the first story was about the mother.
And then he said
now he's about the father.
So he said he talked to the Russos, they had come to him and said, hey, is it okay if she dies? And it was like, that's fine because I was gonna do it and I decided not to.
And then I heard Zoe Saldana didn't want to be in a lot
of
the movies too.
Yeah.
She said I'd rather just be in two
of
these.
She was ready to be done. Yeah.
Yeah. So it all worked out in the end, but I'm watching it going, oh, yeah, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
This doesn't make sense. But I thought overall, somebody was asking me, did you like as much as the other ones? I go, it's very hard to look at it as a single story. I look at all three of them as like one big story about the same character. Like, it was all about Star-Lord going home and whatever. But they do leave it open at the end. I don't know where on Star-Lord now, but when it says the legendary Star-Lord will return.
Yeah.
I think it's hysterical to show him just stuck on the earth, cutting lawns and dealing with his old grandfather. Because it's like, how do you go from flying spaceships to fighting monsters and alien worlds, and now you're just humdrum, bored out of your mind? It's kind of like that Steve Martin movie, Blue Heaven,
where they take the gangster
and they put him out in the suburbs.
Middle,
that's what I'm thinking. Like, it's almost like maybe there's a whole alien invasion on the earth.
Well, there's a whole movie in that, though. Imagine that.
Him start saving
his
planet.
His grandpa dies.
Yeah.
He's lost. I wish I missed space like a sailor.
And I can't
like
get back there
because
I don't have a ship.
Yeah.
How does he get back there? Because he gave the ship to Rocket. It's like, does he call them up? Does he have a phone that he can, hey, could you guys pick me up?
Yeah.
It didn't turn out to be what I thought it was going to be.
My biggest, and again, it wasn't a major complaint, but it could have been a little shorter.
The movie?
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, I feel like that whole sequence
there was a
with
sequence
them going
with the
to
fight. Yeah.
Well, I was thinking the sequence with them in the spacesuits.
Oh, that
going
could have been
to
cut
that
out.
Planet. Yes. Yeah. You know, going into the meat planet. Or
yeah, it really had no
it
bearing
could have
been on the
shorter,
story.
But it's clearly they built a big set piece. And
I know they did, but I was watching it going, if you cut
you
that out.
You could have taken a couple minutes, five minutes out of it.
I think the whole idea that there's a count to Earth, which was much more interesting than the other thing. I was like, wait, this guy actually built a whole duplicate of the Earth, and it's on the opposite. Because I always thought as a kid that was a great idea.
We'll see.
It's on the other side
of
the sun.
It's the Island of Lost Souls.
Yeah, well, or Island of Dr. Moreau, the same thing. He's making the animals.
But, I mean, he basically populated his little world.
So
with
why do we
creation.
Have to show him making all these animals? Because they want to show how he experimented on a rocket or whatever, I guess. Right. But you could have glossed over that. That whole, like you said, the whole... Oh, isn't this funny?
What else? What did they? I mean, that was the thing. Like, what did they accomplish in
Nothing.
That sequence? They were trying to get the code, some kind of name or something.
No, they
file.
Were trying to find the thing to
but
stop
trying
Rocket.
To get the file.
Yeah, to open it up so they could stop his heart.
So they wanted They wanted to unlock the.
Yeah, but it was
code.
15 minutes of.
Right, but it was a big set piece.
It looked like a sleeper. Woody Allen.
It was like a different movie.
It looked like a totally different movie. Yeah. It looked like a 60s.
And the problem is when that ended, it felt kind of like.
Oh,
well,
disjointed.
At what point are we in the movie?
Yeah, and then they were like, oh, we're back on the rocket ship going to counter Earth.
Yeah.
Didn't we know that to begin with? Yeah. Because everybody seemed to know who the High Evolutionary was. They go, oh, he's the guy that makes... And he was like the guy in Blade Runner, like Tyrell Corporation. Yeah. They go, oh, yeah, everybody knows that guy. Right. He makes the replicants.
Right.
And they go, oh, the High Evolutionary? Right. Yeah, he lives right on the other side of the sun. Like, so why are we going here?
Why
don't
you
go
Google
to the source?
Him?
Yeah.
You Google him.
And Rocket knew who made him.
Well, here's the other thing.
Why didn't Rocket ever go back?
Like the second... To me, the reason the second movie worked well... He tried to repeat that in this one, but in the second movie,
there's a little bit slow.
You had Rocket in the ship with Groot or whatever, and then you had the other ones going with Ego.
Yeah, they split up. Yeah,
and then it converges again, and they tried to do the same thing, but it was with his brother, his brother's character with the flute in the big head ship.
Not his brother. You're talking about Craig.
James Gunn's brother.
Yeah. Oh, James Gunn's brother. Yeah. I was like, yeah, there's somebody's brother.
Yeah. So you had him, but it wasn't
as
interesting.
Yes.
That group wasn't as interesting or integral to me, even though they helped. It was like, okay, we're going to be cannon fodder for all these other
people. Well, the whole other thing, too, when he starts blowing up that world and killing everybody, I was like, okay, I guess we're all behind these animal people. You didn't really get to know any of them, and they're just like, well, isn't that sad? He's blowing them up. I have no connection to any of these people.
We didn't know about them before.
So why do I care about them being blown up? It would be like if there was a little girl, the little girl throws the ball to him, like Drax becomes friends with him. Right. Suddenly you identify or you're bond with him, and then you want to stick up for him.
Yeah.
But I was like, I don't care. The monkey guy got blown up. I don't care.
So in a way, how would that could have been improved if maybe part of the team had been on that planet earlier.
Yeah, and they were friends with those people.
And something with them rather than just or being
Rocket,
cannon fodder.
Or those animals that Rocket was friends with, one of them was still alive. Down at, like, the walrus guy was there. And, oh, look what they did to me, Rocket, or something. Yeah, there was a really weird...
I mean, it feels like when they got to that point, they'd already blown their budget.
Yeah, on that planet.
So that's what I said, that middle sequence with the meat planet.
Yeah.
The organic kind of thing.
Yeah, it's just out of place.
It could have been shorter, but was it? It could have also been like Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible when he had to
the wires.
Dive into underground the water thing. Remember, he had to hold his breath, and then he had to get that one computer file out.
Yeah.
It could have been simpler.
Yeah,
but instead it was like the whole group. It just felt a little bit like a waste, maybe.
Yep.
I mean, I still liked it.
No, I liked it. And then there's one... Now we're all like, fuck Guardians, it sucks. But
No, I still liked it.
The other part that I was like, it just seemed like at the end with the animals, we're all getting out of here, all of us. And like, they got all... Whenever you see kids in cages, who's going to sit there and go, well, let the kids die?
Right.
And I'm like, that seems to be like you're really pulling the heartstrings on that one. And then it's like, if the kids in cages didn't get you, guess what? There's baby animals, too.
Right.
We got to save everybody. It's like they're going to kill the little baby raccoons. I'm like, okay, James Gunn. So you're pushing it now. You're really like, I get it. They're going to save everybody, You know what I'm saying? It was like a little heavy-handed.
Well, here's one other little thing.
There's another nitpick.
That I thought of at the time we were watching it. I felt like the queuing up the song battle sequence thing was maybe overused.
Last Exit to Brooklyn.
I mean, it was just, there was one too many of those.
Too many song, needle drops.
Songs connected to the battle thing. It felt.
In the first movie, it felt organic.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's cool. Like, the song. The second movie, it was felt like, a little better, you know.
But it was also, in the second one, it was kind of clear that they had the boom, or whatever the music, they played the music when they went into the fight.
Well, you know what it
in
was?
In this one, it almost felt a little bit kind of like the way Taika did it, Thor.
It was
where it almost
random.
Felt like, oh, it's a cute thing we did before, but well, it's not going to feel as organic.
Here's what I'm thinking. The first movie, the mother made the mixtape,
yeah.
and it was mostly 60s and 70s
right.
songs.
Right.
The second movie, he still has it. It's still 70s and song like that. So you've got, like, there's a certain time period.
Right.
The new movie, because he gave him the Zoom that had 300, you can go back and forth between 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000s. And I'm like, maybe that's why it seems so disjointed, because now you're getting whole different eras of music.
Yeah,
like.
Yeah.
They had the Springsteen's Badlands is at the end credits, which I'm like, why didn't you put that in the middle of the movie?
Yeah.
Because I would have rather heard that. Because it was a 70s song. You know,
the music choices were good. It just felt like maybe there were too many.
No Sleep to Brooklyn. I'm like, it's fine, but I'm not into that music. And it seems like, what are we doing there?
Yeah.
I heard they play the music on set, which I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
I thought they dropped it in afterwards, but they said
he gets
they blast it and
they
let the actors go to it. And I'm like, and I watched them film that sequence at the end where they're doing that big like hallway battle and how they have to stand there. And then literally there's a guy in a swing on a camera. And they, I was like, how do they do that? Chris Pratt's in one position shooting like this, not moving. The camera guy's on a swing and some dude's running around pulling him.
Right.
And that's how you get that 360 effect and everything. Looks great on film,
but
to watch it being made, you're like, boy, does that look stupid.
Yeah.
Because there's no sound, there's no effects, obviously. And there's people that are going to be CGI later, and he's just standing there like, bang, 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 boom, bang, you know?
I also didn't, I don't like this design of Groot.
The big one? The big, bulky, fat
I didn't
one.
Like the look of him as much.
Well, they said he was supposed to be like, jocked. I'm like,
I mean, I'm just saying, visually, I like the original, the first movie. I like the way he looked in there.
But that Groot's dead.
He was good
which
as
Which I never
the teen
thought he
version.
Was. Dead. They go, no, that one's dead. This is a different one. I go, is it? Because I always thought he just broke off a twig of it and just regrew himself.
Yeah, like cloning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They said, oh, no, no, that original Groot died. The second Groot you see is a totally different Groot. I go,
I mean, I thought, I was thinking like in the special, the holiday special.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, would they do
fake.
That just so they
it
could get
like
a guy in
a sponge
suit?
Rubber suit. Yeah. I was like, oh, they couldn't afford the effects. I get it, you know?
I just didn't like that design as much, I guess.
No.
But I mean, it's.
It looked like a guy in a suit. It didn't look like.
Didn't
look like an alien creature. Like that weird blobby thing that was in Quantum Mania that Dave DeSmalchian played.
Yeah, that was,
like the thing with the, I have holes. Oh, Billy Golly. When you watch the making of that, which is on one of, I think it's on Disney, Quantum Mania, they show him running around the set with those gray ball, you know, the ping pong balls. It is so goofy as hell to watch that. I go, and then you see Michael Douglas, like, am I really in this? Really? I used to bang girls in Fatal Attraction. Now I'm riding ants. What happened here? Bill Murray, I don't know. I think he just showed up. They had a little sequence with him. And the guy that wrote Quantumania only wrote Avatar, and he wrote this one. That's it. He has two writing credits. And Bill Murray's like, have you ever done this before? And that weird sarcastic, I think he's being kidding, but he might be hurtful at the same time.
Murray. Wasn't when that was happening, wasn't that when he was getting canceled for the other stuff?
Murray?
Yeah.
Oh, he is. There's something going on set. When you watch it, he's very
distracted.
Distracted. He's not talking. He's not the typical funny Bill Murray.
He was responsible for them shutting down Aziz Ansari's movie that he was directing.
And then he got, the
And that movie's never, I don't think it ever resumed production.
Finished it, no.
And it was because of something Bill
made,
some inappropriate comments or something.
I like watching the making of things sometimes. I go,
well, you got your Blu-ray now, so you can watch all
I could watch the Blu-ray.
Hopefully they have those scenes on there.
The deleted scenes? There used to be, it always seemed like the deleted scenes were more substantial.
Yeah,
now
were.
It's just like outtakes. It's like, really?
Yeah,
that's what you're doing?
Well, I told you, it still bothers me that there were more scenes on YouTube.
You said Wakanda Forever than this on the DVD.
Yeah, the
I'm
DVD
like, well, why did I even buy this thing?
I mean, that's the stuff that's fun to me.
I saw the first clip of the Indiana Jones movie yesterday.
Oh, did they
put a sequence with him in Church. What's her name? She got three names.
Daughter? You mean his?
Goddaughter.
Right.
Fleabag lady.
Right.
Phoebe
Waller.
Phoebe Waller Bridges. Yeah. Church. Yeah, they're in a little car.
Yeah, we're in the church.
They're in a little car scene, and he's yelling back and forth to her. And they're like, no, we're not doing any CGI or special effects. I go, there's no way Harrison Ford is jumping from that, or stuntman jumped from one little, like, go-kart thing to another one, like Spider-Man. I'm like, come on. He didn't. There was no effort. It was just like, oh, I'm about to get hit by a truck. Let me just jump from this movie vehicle to another. I go, I get it. He's Indiana Jones, but he's also 70-year-old Indiana Jones, even though he's 80. But we'll see. June is a busy month, dude. We're going to have Spider-Verse. The week or so later, we're going to have The Flash, a.k.a. Batman. And then a week after that, 2 weeks after that, we have Indiana Jones. So June is the big month this year.
Almost like it was 1989.
I know it is. That's exactly how it went down. Batman came... No,
Indiana, Jamie Last Bond Crusade. In there, too.
Last Crusade came out in May.
Star Trek was Next Generation movie.
No. It was The Final Frontier. 1989 was Shatner's directorial debut with that shitty...
I just remember there was Timothy Dalton.
It was
Indiana Jones and the Temple. Last Crusade.
Yeah.
Batman. Because Indiana Jones was May, Batman was June.
Yep.
And then, like, James Bond
was the Timothy Dalton Star Trek, July. Star
and then
Trek.
I think there was a Ghostbusters or something.
Ghostbusters 89 came out. Yeah.
Was there a Ghostbusters 2?
It was
too?
A sequel to Ghostbusters, yeah. 5 years after the first one. When they rode down the street.
I just remember it was a crazy...
With the Statue of Liberty and singing Jackie Wilson.
It was a crazy...
It was a crazy summer. Yeah.
That's the first one, too, where the movies made all their money in the first 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And then the next big blockbuster opened. So
it was one after another after another. Yeah.
I mean, Batman had, like, the giant, biggest opening ever when it came out. It made some, like, $50 million in the first weekend. But then it did play. I mean, that's the thing. There was still movie theater. It wasn't like they had streaming.
And then in 2008, what was the big summer that year? You had The Dark Knight, Indiana Jones,
and Iron Man.
Yeah. Indiana Jones and Iron Man. All three of them. All we're missing is an Iron Man movie. Though we have, what do you call it coming out? Oppenheimer with Robert Downey Jr. in that. And Cillian Murphy, is it?
When is the...
That's July.
When is the next Marvel show?
The Secret Invasion is June 20th.
So that's June 2, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Have you been watching Superman and Lois?
I have. Waiting for Cutlets to appear.
I just watched the thing that had his voice in there.
Yeah, his voice, but that's it. Yeah. I write to him. I go, when are you coming on? I'm coming.
But I thought that was an interesting twist. Not that we want to spoil it. But
well, they've already shown the commercial with him coming on.
But it was an interesting twist that they basically...
That inner game.
...implying that he might be in jail for not... For the wrong, like in other words, he was
wrongfully accused.
Yeah, yeah. Even though he probably did stuff that deserved him being in jail.
Yeah.
That one thing that they got him for.
I think it's funny that they have two Walking Dead guys on that show. Chad Coleman is playing.
Is that filmed in Toronto or something?
Yeah. Yeah.
Was Walking Dead one of those?
Walking Dead was in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Everything's in Atlanta.
Atlanta probably has limitations too.
I don't know. What do we got here? We got another. See, we always about an hour and a half. Okay. That's as much as the people can take our voices. And they do take our voices. Whether it's controversial or they agree with us or hate us or cancel us. We don't.
So, I'll promote.
Jerry's
also
promoting.
Also, in July, I have my fourth Star Wars covers. Plus the Mandalorian cover.
Why it didn't come out in May, I don't know.
Plus the Shazam Night Terrors cover, which I looked in the new previews, it's a 1 in 25 variant.
Ooh!
But it means I'm not going to be able to get them.
I know we're not going to. BoomTube will get them. I'll ask him to pull one because he's going to have to order 25.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. It's just funny. So I looked through the whole DC thing.
I don't even look through it. I get it. I look through the Marvel. Because DC's
most of
always
it,
like
most of the month traits. Is taken up with Night Terrors as a crossover thing.
Okay.
You know, I
did pick up the new
like
Shazam.
I read it.
I
read the Geoff Johns one too, you know.
I picked up, what did I get last week? There was a bunch of DCs in last week. I'm trying to think what was on the wall. There was a Batman 900 I picked up, which was funny. Shark repellent played a role in that one. Bat shark repellent, that's all I'll say.
Well, there was a...
Wasn't there Superman, I think?
Well, I've been buying Action. I haven't been buying...
I bought the Harley Quinn one. Harley Quinn takes on the DC universe. She had it was the recreation of Action
good?
One.
Right.
It was fluff, but...
Is that the one that had the Crisis takeoff?
Yeah. Yeah. No, the one I bought, I had the... No, you're talking about when he's holding the dead one? The Superman, the Perez cover? Superman.
That one they did?
No, the one I picked up was her smash in the car.
Oh.
The Action Comics 1 cover.
Yeah.
That was like the week before.
Yeah, I don't...
There's a whole bunch of George Perez tribute covers coming out from Marvel
in
July.
Too.
I don't know if that's just pinups that George did. I don't know what they're
using.
It's
got to be something. It's like he's busier in death than he was
alive. I was thinking, So that's coming out. And,
I mean, hopefully his wife is getting money for it.
Yeah. I would hope. I would think so, yeah.
I mean, where are they pulling those drawings from?
We had a lot of drawings.
It's got to be commissions.
Yeah. I wonder if one of my Captain Americas will show up. He drew me a nice cap before he died.
The one that I think they pictured in the catalog was a Hulk one or something.
Was it just like white with a round background?
No, it wasn't. They just showed like a Hulk. It was definitely George Perez Hulk.
Did you pick up that Planet of the Apes book?
No.
No, I did.
I thought the Peacemaker one was fun.
I did get the Peacemaker one.
I like that. Like I said, Action Comics has been good.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward
to... Spider-Man 25. Spider-Man 26, major character dies. They all say it's going to be Mary Jane. I go, have they killed Mary Jane yet? I don't think they have. They've killed Aunt May once or twice.
She went away, right, when they dissolved So this week...
Maybe they'll kill J. Jonah James?
JSA 4 comes up.
Oh, finally. Maybe.
Yeah, I saw...
Is it
definitely
coming out?
They were doing one Monday or
last
weekend.
Last month you drew some Sergeant Rock. What'd you draw this month? Special.
I did like two pages and they colored them really dark.
Ooh.
It's kind of annoying.
So why bother with that pencil work?
It was annoying.
Can you make it
out?
It
was very dark. What?
Do they obliterate some of your ink?
No, it's just that they're really darkly layered.
Wow.
Like I was a splash page with all the JSA characters dead.
Yeah.
And I saw the color version and the guy did a good job with it.
And then somehow.
And they must have said, hey, can you
darkness.
Put a layer of gray over it or something. It's really murky.
What was I going to ask you? Did you ever speak? There's an omnibus coming out this week. It's a Thor 4 omnibus. It's all the Jared Conway, John Buscema era, right around 190 to 200. Yeah. But the thing of it is, I saw, is they said at that time, DC raised their prices on the books around the early 70s, and Marvel cut back a couple pages. And what Roy told the guys to do, and John Buscema, is that they started doing two-page spreads.
They paid them, right.
Now, what is this? I don't understand. Did they pay them for only one page, even though they drew two?
Yeah.
Really?
They took a page and proportioned it so that it would be a spread.
Right.
But it wasn't like the full-size spread. It would be like one 10x15 page turned sideways.
Yeah.
And then
so what did they do? Just take a panel and blow it up?
No. They drew one page as a spread. And then they printed it as two pages.
So they paid
the artist for one page, but they
even though he's
it
drawing
two
pages,
yeah,
he's taking.
But they're
two
doing
pages.
Because they were able to do them smaller.
Oh, and I was like, I didn't understand how that saved money.
It saved money
because
they didn't
have to pay the artist.
They didn't pay the artist.
But
they
even
didn't
though,
pay the letterer, they didn't pay the colorist, they didn't pay the inker.
But the page count
for
was
one
still
page.
Considered, even though it was two pages.
Yeah.
That's when this all starts
Sneaky.
To happen. Because they showed Buscema the artwork, you'd never know that it was blown up like that. But
it's not blown up; it's just not reduced as much.
Oh, I know, but it's funny because it's a lot of space.
I noticed it when I was a kid. I remember I was a teenager, but I remember going,
"Why is it so big?
The lines look bigger, thicker."
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it wasn't reduced as much. It would almost be close to print size.
I'm going to have to check it out because I never caught on to that.
Yeah.
But it was in Alder books.
Yeah.
For what, like a couple months?
I think it ran a couple months, yeah.
And then they got the wind of it, and they're like, hey, what are you doing? Raise the price.
I don't know.
Because remember when DC went to 25 cents?
Yeah.
And Marvel did it for
20,
one month, and they went back down?
Yeah.
More pages. 32 pages or something. For 25 cents.
Again, you know that it's always somebody
it's a business.
Trying to not pay
So that was
the,
Roy's idea?
People.
Roy's like the editor.
Was he there? Was that in 77?
Yeah, because Stan was... No, that wasn't 77. 76? 75, 76.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. his Stan was trying to sell stuff, and Roy was running, and then Shooter was coming
Roy
in.
Roy was in really quickly and then out.
He was not there that long.
Jerry Conway was editor-in-chief for like a week.
Yeah.
And then I thought they brought Archie in, and then that's where Shooter came in.
Well, I'll find out, because I want to pick that up, because I only have a couple of those books. I don't remember those Thor books being very good, though.
Yeah.
That's when Hercules starts showing up, and he's in a lot of the books.
Didn't they do the
issue 200?
Did they
Thor
start using Eternals characters? Or that was when Roy did it.
Roy did the Eternals character. That was late
70s.
Yeah. Yeah. This one had Ulic in it.
Yeah.
Ulic's wife or something. She's a big lizard lady. And the Fire Lord's in it. I remember picking Ulic.
Ulic's wife.
Yeah.
Ulic?
Ulic. Mr. and Mrs. Ulic. Table for the Ulic.
Lulic.
Lou Ulic. Lulic.
Lulic.
Lulic. Ulic the troll. I said that to Smita once. He couldn't stop laughing. I go, how come all these other guys look heroic in real life, but I look like Ulic the troll? And he just fell off the table laughing. He's like, I've never heard anybody use that in a sentence. I go, well, you have now. Yep. So that's your plugs? I'm plugging something, too. I have Terrificon, July 28th to the 30th. See Jerry Ordway in action. See Ron Garney dropkick someone in the throat. Probably me. Meet celebrities. Two more that I can't announce yet because the ink's not dry on their contract. And one might not be coming if she doesn't stop bothering me. So it depends on my mood that day. But they'll all be there. Where? At Terrificon, July 28th to the 30th.
It's actually going to be sooner than any of us expected.
I know. It's going to be 2 months. Yeah. And I'll be like, I'm going to. I have almost all the flights purchased. I have 22 more flights to buy. You don't want to see me cry until you see me get that credit card out. And American Express calls me. They go, did you just buy 15 flights? I go, uh-huh. So for all you kids outside who think this is free, it ain't.
It's not free.
And then Mitchie worries about if he's going to make his money back. Because if I don't.
You'll make your money back.
One day. One day, Jerry.
You always do.
Sometimes it's been close. Sometimes some people don't make their guarantees, and Uncle Mitchie has to write a big check. Not saying anything. But that was my fault. I should have promoted him more. Anyway, I got nothing.
You got nothing?
You got nothing? That's it, kiddies. Go to the movies. I think we're going to a movie when? Not till Spider-Man.
Spider-Man, but
two
that's
more
like
weeks.
June, right?
June. Next week, we got nothing. We'll be at the pizza place. Today, we didn't go to the pizza place. I said, no, I'm not eating pizza, but I ate a big, fat chicken sandwich. What a salad.
I thought yours was a wrap.
It was a wrap.
Oh.
Well, same. Got to get that Speedo going, Jerry. Got to get that Speedo.
How is that working?
It's not working. I see some of these people walking by. They ain't wearing Speedos either, so we're all good here. All right, that's it. Say goodnight, Jerry.
Goodnight.
All right.
This has been a production of Big Fedora Marketing, LLC. The folks that bring you the terrific Comic-Con, GamerCon, and so much more. Thanks for listening.